Is this thing on? I think it is. Hey, everybody. My name is Derek, and I am the owner, creator, and a head silicone slinger here at Amavidi, where we make silicone toys for adults. All right. We're back. It's been a week, and we've got Felicity from Failophile Reviews on tonight, and we're going to be talking about the life of a sex toy reviewer, and we're going to be talking about lubes and toys and all kinds of stuff. So I'll be bringing Felicity on in just a moment. But did you notice we've got Patreon supporters, and they are awesome. And if you want to, you can support us by going to Patreon, Amavidi. No, I got it backwards. Patreon.com/Amavidi. And you can support us in any way you like. I think that is... Wait, no, there's something new. We might have Super Chats available now. I'm not sure. We'll have to figure that out. I think Super Chats might be available. We'll look at it. Maybe? I don't know. Something new happening with the YouTube channel, but we'll see how that rolls out. I'm not entirely sure if that's coming out yet or not. But yeah, it's been an interesting week. Getting everything lined up. We've got Felicity tonight. We've got Fergus Monster next weekend. And we're getting some new guests lined up. I'll have more to announce in the coming days. Maybe by the end of this week, I'll be able to announce a few things. But yeah, I'm really excited for what we've got coming up. Well, with that, let's get Felicity in. Let me see if I can do this right. I think that's it. Felicity, how you doing?
Hello. Hi. Good to see you again.
Yes. Thanks for hanging out with me.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing where this is going. We've had some good pre-show calls, and it's been really great chatting with Amavidi and just learning a little bit about how the show goes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been fun. I mean, you get to kind of see how the behind the scenes works a little bit. And
yes,
it's always, you know, everybody gets to see the front side of the screen. But then, you know, you get to see the behind the scenes. And I've always thought about these kinds of, well, the way I think of the show is that this is a way for people to get to see the behind the scenes of your life and kind of what your world is like, because, you know, they get to know you through Twitter and through your YouTube channel and all of those things. But, you know, they don't always get to know who you are. So I want to give people that opportunity. And why don't you take just a second and give us a little bit of a background about kind of who you are? What is your background like?
Definitely. Yes. No, I totally agree. I think a good review can be kind of a story told about how a toy works for a particular person. But when I first started getting into toys, obviously at first I fell into just the usual, go to Adam and Eve kind of thing and you end up with a PVC dildo. And then I started doing more research and more reading, as many toy enthusiasts do, and found other reviewers and just... seeing individual tastes, I think, was amazing to me. And I thought, I feel like someone should do something definitive lining up different products. I was really interested in silicone and independent artists like yourself, like Amavidi, and how Shore Durometer impacted the feel of different toys. Mm. So I started my site just to write a silicone dildo firmness guide, essentially, to have this piece of info out there for people on the internet to read. And I went from there, and I think it's really important to talk about individual tastes, individual preferences, that we're all kind of on a spectrum for what we like. And I try to include what I like and how this feels to me, and also stack up toys one versus another. So I started writing guides that would compare vibrators, the strength of one vibrator, one popular toy versus another, kind of just so people could pick and choose based on their own tastes, find something hopefully that would work better for their body.
Yeah. Actually, you just threw so much at me there, because one of the things I thought was interesting is that you do the guides, and it's not just like a one-off description of a toy. It's more of a spectrum. It's like it's not a toy in a vacuum. And it's not just toys either. Right. You know, we'll come to this in a little bit, but you also do lubes and things like that.
Yes.
So, it's interesting that you chose that kind of spectrum to have something to compare against. Talk about that just a little bit. Why?
Right. Well, coming into it from, I think when people get into toys, they just go out there and they just see there's so many options. How do you choose between all these different products? So we all have a, you know, on the internet, on online shopping, it's amazing because we do have so many choices, but it's also, it can be very confusing. So I go in and I do definitely curate the guides. So I'm not just like picking random, you know, Amazon products from some random, you know, mass producer who people aren't going to be talking about. You know, I'll review Weavi products versus Lilo products, etc., but also bring in smaller brands that maybe I think are at a better price point, and that also have a lot of power. So it's, yeah, it's just trying to choose and find the right fit for your body. This is something that I hope that my work will enable people to make better choices for themselves, or at least, you know, see how toys stack up against each other, because we got a lot of options.
Yeah. Boy, I've got several things here I want to get to. I'm making notes as we go, and we're going so fast that I'm like, I can't type and get everything in here. Yeah.
I'm reading the comments now. I'm like seeing people are saying yes.
By the way, George is in the chat. She's wrangling all the questions, and yeah, she is, she's going to be throwing notes in there. And if there are any links to anything that we mentioned, she'll be taking care of that. And I want to throw a shout out to George. Yeah. Cause I couldn't do this without her. Now I have to ask the question, you know,
yes, sir.
There are so many other things that you could be doing for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you a reviewer? Why are you a sex toy reviewer?
It started out essentially as a hobby, as a project. It was something that I thought was fun. It was just personal interest. Mm-hmm. I think like a lot of good independent silicone makers, they're just people who are out there and they're trying to buy toys for themselves, and they're finding other reviewers or other makers that they think are cool. They enjoy reading that. They enjoy using those products. And so, but there's kind of a gap somewhere in the market, or they can't find quite what they're looking for. So that's what I did. I saw something I didn't think. I wanted something that was kind of like listing out, trying to be definitive, very analytical, comparing one product to another. So I just started doing that on the side, actually, as I was working as a book editor. And so I'd never written before. I'd only edited other people's work and commented on the content, or, you know, found stray punctuation marks. So I just kind of progressed, and I ended up being a writer myself. So it's been really an interesting journey discovering all the different kinds of toys that are out there as well.
Now, about that journey as a writer, I mean, you were kind of filling a gap that you saw, and it was almost like it kind of pulled you into being a writer. Well, you coming from a literary background, but it sounds like, you know, coming from being an editor to being a writer is a little bit different world. How was that transition for you? I mean, were there fits and stops, and, you know, did you feel confident? Did you stumble? What was that like for you?
Oh yeah. I mean, anyone getting into writing, I'm sure it's a lot of trial and error. It's practice. I still am learning how to pare down my writing, be concise, you know, less is more, etc. I started out actually coming from an academic background where I was working with a lot of footnotes and very detailed citations. So I was used to that. So I found myself being like, oh, wait, I hear people want something that they can read and understand quickly. Maybe I should move some of this information. So I started writing reviews with a bunch of footnotes, okay, trying to make my writing more concise, and kind of started shuffling information to notes that someone could read if they wanted to later. And then, definitely was a process. It's very much a process, learning to write and trying to get your thoughts out there. And you know, occasionally, sometimes my experience sections of my reviews are just, I mean, it's like I'm just here talking.
Yeah. One of the things that, as you were talking, something that popped into my head was, you know, you're talking about all these different categories and all these different manufacturers.
Yes.
How does impartiality fit into that? Because do manufacturers send you product, or are you out there having to buy your own? How does that work?
It's a mixture. When you start as a reviewer, you definitely have to be buying your own product to show that you can you have some experience, you have some knowledge, you have to start building up a following, get your reviews out there, show that you can actually write and you know, put out a review that people may want to read and gain some information from. So it starts out and you'll do that. You'll purchase a number of toys. I had toys from a lot of fantasy makers because I was a dildo enthusiast. Originally I'd only bought a couple of vibrators and I was really into it. Oh, I guess I just heard Fiona yell really loud. Oh my gosh, the cat. The cat is in the background doing something.
Yes.
Yeah, so it starts out, you buy your own products, and then you'll start, once you build a site, you can start working with affiliate retailers who typically will be doing more big brand things depending on the shop. So you will get a product for free, although you may be putting 8 hours of labor into writing a final piece in exchange for a $30 toy. As you're trying to get your writing style developed and figuring out SEO and figuring out graphic design and figuring out how to run a website. So there's that. And then occasionally manufacturers will send products also definitely without cost, expecting that you'll be linking to some retailer. So there are a lot of different cases that it can be. Also, you know, in some cases, people will take money just for simply for writing a review and disclose that at the end.
And what about editorial control? Do any of the manufacturers ask for that? Or am I using the right words there?
I think some manufacturers, I don't work with manufacturers who are going to tell me what I have to say in a review.
Okay.
I think that that's probably more prevalent with, I get a lot of requests from Amazon sellers who will be wanting someone to write a positive review in exchange for a free product on Amazon. So I don't work with that kind of seller, but I'm sure it's happened in some cases, but luckily I've been able to curate enough where it's just like, oh, there's no reason that I would work with someone who wanted control over my work before it was published or after it was published. I mean, if there's something that's factually wrong, and if manager writes to me and says, "Hey, we saw this thing in your review. This is actually, you know, we'd like to correct this," then I might consider that. Although that case hasn't happened to me yet. Like, one time they called it a typo. One time someone found a typo, which I appreciated. That was great.
An editor had a typo?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just want to publish something so much that you don't do the second edit before you publish it. It definitely happens.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, you know, if you maintain some, what's the word I'm looking for? Integrity in the beginning, that it doesn't create a problem in the first place, and you never have to deal with that problem in the future.
I think that's true in general. Yeah, you just have to work with, you know, reputable shops and reputable manufacturers who will curate their products, or at least be fully transparent about when products are maybe made of PVC and you could choose not to go with that product. I really like to work with brands that have a very strong focus on body safety was one of the other points of starting Falafel Reviews, was to promote body safe products and educate.
Yeah.
On you know, things that are non-toxic and non-porous.
Right. George just gave me a note that my levels were a little bit low. So let me know if my volume is kind of low there. So or if you have any problems hearing me. Now you said you came in as a collector.
Yes.
And now was that collector as for indie toys?
It was indie toys along with other toys that I had seen really good positive feedback about. Like, it depends on whether you consider Vixen Creations to be an indie manufacturer. There's a small American brand, maybe.
Right.
This is, you know, independent silicone artists on Etsy back when Etsy was where all the cool indies did hang out, along with, you know, Vixen, Tantus, brands like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tantus is, I mean, it's fairly well known, but it's still kind of independent American. But yeah, they seem to be very, very conscious of their quality.
Yeah, they were one of the first manufacturers of silicone products. I think it started out with, back in the history, there was Vixen started out really early, Tantas started out really early in the 90s, in the early 90s, just Metis Black making toys with a partner and focusing on silicone products that were safer. And
Yeah.
SquarePeg got in the game. SquarePeg Toys was an awesome manufacturer, the first maker of 100% super soft silicone. I appreciate a lot. And then after that, you got into Bad Dragon. And in the 2010s is really when independent artists started creating a lot more silicone dildos, super soft toys, platinum silicone. It was, yeah,
Gotcha.
awesome.
Okay. Now, how long did it take you to feel like you were actually a writer? How long did it take you to feel like you could think of yourself as a writer?
It's a great question. I started writing in 2017, at least 2 years. I
Okay.
mean, two, somewhere between 2 and 3 years.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, one of the things that caught my eye was I'm going to see if I can bring it up here. Where is it? I think this is it. Yep, there it is. Your lube safety guide. This was something that I saw, and I'm going to kind of just scroll through here. And this table of contents, I don't know if people can read it or anything, but this thing is huge. There is so much information here, and it is impressive in its volume, if nothing else, but also impressive in its detail. And there's just so much in here that I would love to get into, but I think there are a couple things that are kind of important that people should at least kind of be aware of. And why don't you take a moment and kind of give people kind of the idea of what brought the article about, and then maybe some of the highlights of things that are important that people should know about lubes.
That's true. Okay, so lubricant safety is a topic I think that the information is even not as thorough as we find a lot of awareness about body safe toys now, luckily. You see people talking about silicone and how it's safer than thermoplastic elastomer, thermoplastic rubber, TPE, TPR. So silicone toys and even, non-porous, essentially non-porous ABS plastic, these safe toy materials I think are really well known, but what it's easier to gloss over and to realize that lubricants can be safe, body safe, or not body safe as well. And it's hard to tell what is safe. We see certain lubricant ingredients that will alter what we call the osmolality of a lubricant, which is essentially its particle concentration. So osmolality, if it's too high, what it'll do is it'll cause your cells, it really affects the protective barriers within cells, within both vaginal and rectal cells. So this can leave cells, those cells, if a high osmolality lubricant is applied, it can leave them more prone to damage. It can leave them more prone to bacterial infection with the vagina. And we also have the issue of pH. So this guide does both osmolality, which is really, really hard to find information about for a wide range of lubricants. So that's why I had to do a table and actually acquire an osmometer, a working Advanced Instruments osmometer, to test just all these different lubricants that are out there on the market to try to measure them for how safe they are based on the medical studies that we do have now. And also pH, because pH is especially important with vaginal lubricants because the vagina is acidic. In order to protect against certain pathogens, you can get a bacterial infection, bacterial vaginosis, and other harmful things going on if your pH is too high. So, I mean, a lot of water-based, this only applies to water-based and hybrid lubricants, first of all. It's water-based and hybrid lubricants that you're going to have these safety issues with. And the really scary part is that lubricant safety, the testing has traditionally been done based on a model. If you look into, I also have a full medical studies list that will go into all the data discussing this. It is a lot to take in, and I try to put it in kind of a briefer form that you can absorb easily in the guide. But this, the lubricant testing that traditionally has been done for vaginal safety has been done on rabbit and guinea pig vaginas. On tissues of animals that their vaginas do not have a similarity with the normal, healthy human vaginal microbiome. So these kind of older testing models, scientists since the 2000s, the early like 2005 and onward, have started doing more tests on reconstructed, you know, extracted vaginal tissues to look at how osmolality does affect these tissues, not on animal models. So it's been kind of a revolution that I think that the medical profession has been very slow to catch up on, as far as FDA lubricant approval is concerned. So you have glycerin-containing lubes, and high concentrations of glycerin can be very problematic, and they're still used by even doctors' offices based on this, because of this older testing model.
Yeah. Okay. So osmolality. Correct me if I'm wrong. The way I'm kind of understanding that is how likely it is to hydrate or dehydrate a cell. Is that fairly accurate?
Yes, it's so that the human cells will push out water in order to compensate for this lubricant with this very high concentration or osmolality. So they'll push out this water, and in that case, it can be problematic because the vaginal cells are made of four different tissue layers. And if you start stripping off the outer layers, then it leaves the lower layers, the basal and parabasal layers, and exposed and more susceptible.
Yeah. Okay. So
yes.
I think that's what we're looking at here. So yeah, okay. I interrupted. I apologize. But what we're trying to avoid is causing any damage to these superficial layers right in here. Okay.
Exactly. And some of the lubricants that do have really, really high concentrations, hyperosmolal, will even start to degrade in this parabasal layer. And really just, if you look at some of these cell cultures that scientists have done, it will just like, it just becomes this like broken wavy line as the tissues are changed by the lubricant.
Mm. Is there any way that somebody could know what the osmolality of a lube is if they didn't have this guide?
There are a few select manufacturers who do publish that data. Besides that, generally not. There are two companies that do who have been focused on these kind of forthcoming studies for the past 20 years. Two of them are Good Clean Love and Ah Yes, or just Yes Lubricants, who's based in the United Kingdom. Good Clean Love is a U.S. brand. And they're found in a lot of drugstores as well. So like even Walgreens will have Good Clean Love. Mm-hmm. So they're part of the select group, very rare, who do publish, who consider their lubricants isoosmotic, which means that it's balanced. It has a safe water balance for either vaginal or anal tissues. It's interesting because vaginal and rectal, colorectal tissues do need about the same osmolality fluid balance for safety reasons. So as whereas pH is different between the vagina and the rectum. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Well, that's good because I was going into pH next. So the pH, as you mentioned, between vaginal and anal lubes is going to be different. And well, I would assume that, you know, to be healthy, they should be different. And I think that you go into that in your guide.
Yes, it was really interesting to me because I didn't know this until recently, that the rectum tends to, I mean, there, it's hard. Okay, vaginal pH is set very firmly. There's this very firm range that almost everyone will accept that a healthy pH for the vagina is 3.8 to 4.5, outside of a menstrual cycle, in which case it may be somewhat higher for a few days. Okay, so 3.8 to 4.5 for the vagina. However, for the anus, for the rectum, not the anus is the whole, but the rectum, the colorectal area, it's going to be more around 7. It's going to be basically neutral, not acidic. It's going to be somewhat alkaline, maybe up to 8, even 9. So it's not acidic in the same way that the vagina is naturally.
Mm. Okay. And now, you mentioned also that this is more specifically toward water-based and hybrid lubes. So yes. When we get into silicone-based and oil-based lubes, Then we're talking about different parameters.
Yes, exactly. Since I wrote this, I've had a few people, I think I may have inadvertently freaked out because they were using silicone lubricant and are now worried that it may be harmful. And silicone lubricant may cause some problems with cured silicone toys, may cause a little bit of problem with your platinum silicone products in some cases, but it doesn't pose any safety issues that we know about for vaginal and anal use. Silicone lube is great. It's seen as it's on these cell cultures that I've looked at in all the studies that do relate to the osmolality of water-based or even hybrid lubricants. The silicone lubes just don't really, they don't have a pH or an osmolality, so they don't have the same problems with dealing with breaking down the cell barriers.
Okay. And what about oil-based lubes?
Yeah, oil-based is kind of along the same lines, although there are some concerns, and I haven't really seen a conclusive answer about whether coconut oil specifically can be problematic for vaginal use. Some people are concerned about that. Some people think it's fine for vaginal use because coconut oil does have certain antimicrobial properties. And so you will sometimes hear about people trying to use it for yeast infection, and I don't have a conclusive answer about that.
Okay. Gotcha. I should mention this. Let's see. I want to make sure I get this right. Because this is a normal disclaimer that we do, and I forgot to mention this earlier, is that, as always, any of the products that we mention, it's because we have experience with it, or it's something that we've used or that we like. It's not because it's sponsored in any way. We're not getting kickbacks. We're not getting any kind of sponsorship money or anything like that. So I just want to remind everybody that if there are any products or anything that we do mention, it's not because we're getting sponsored in any way. So
that's right. I would do a lot better selling most of these glycerin-containing lubes and would make more money selling those than with Good Clean Love. But Good Clean Love is clearly the safer option based on all the research and all the testing that I've done.
I actually just saw Good Clean Lube at Walgreens this week. I had seen it on your I saw it on your list, and I was like, I wonder if it is actually at Walgreens. So it's actually really easy to find. And it's one of the ones at the top of your list, isn't it?
Yes, right. So that's great. One of the most really in that safe isoosmotic range. It's just the fluid concentration is right on. The only thing is that I know some people have scent sensitivities, and their first lubricant, Almost Naked, have a strong vanilla smell. So if you have a problem with scent, you know, go for the one that's called BioNude. It is scent-free. So there's that. There are, and based on the UK, has some well-balanced lubricants and also publishes very accurate osmolality data and is very concerned with the science of lubricant safety as well. Most of the lubricant makers do not publish any data, but some of them are reasonably, they're slightly hypoosmotic. They have a little bit of a low concentration, a little bit closer to water. Water is zero on the scale, by the way. Milliosmoles per kilogram that osmolality is measured in. Water is a zero. So you have that. The slightly lower lubricants are all the studies have tested them on colorectal and on vaginal epithelial cervical cells. Cultures have seen that lubricants that are slightly in that slightly lower range are pretty safe too. So Silliquid H2O comes out looking pretty good. Good Vibrations has a Please Gel lubricant that's also in that good range. So there are some there's some options out there that come out pretty well balanced. It doesn't have to be Good Clean Love.
Okay. I think George put it in the chat, but I'll make sure that there's a link to your guide in the video description. There was a question about allergies.
Yes.
Are there any... I don't really know how to ask the question other than, could you talk about allergies or allergens that might be in lubes?
Right. So some people are definitely more sensitive to ingredients than others. That's true, and it's important to realize right off. Some people do have slightly different reactions to lubricant ingredients, particularly lubricant ingredients that other people might not have a problem with. Even I've heard people speculating that with water-based lubricants, you do have to have a couple preservatives in them to keep them on the shelf without having any microbial issues within the bottle when the bottle is sitting for a year or more, right? So I've heard of some people, common ones that are seen as pretty safe are potassium sorbate and sodium benzoate. I've seen people speculate, but not really confirm anecdotally that they had a problem with potassium sorbate, but I can't say anything about whether that's true or not. So some people do have different things that tick their boxes. And I've heard from a number of people with vaginas who have responded to my lube guide since then that they really just like silicone lubricant if they've had problems with water-based lubricants in the past.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, nothing. I think that was about okay. The end of my thought. Thank you.
Did I see that you had ordered, I think I'm putting the story together, if I remember it correctly, that you had ordered some lubes from Amazon and that they were incredibly thick versus what you had found from a local store. Am I putting the story together right there?
Right. It's really interesting. I ordered some lubricants. I ordered 3 bottles of Liquid C to see how it is. And all of the kind of not really thick, all the Liquid lubes besides Liquid Sassy essentially were hovering around this range of around like anywhere between 50 to 150 milliosmoles per kilogram, right? So around 100 is pretty much the median range for all the Liquid water based besides Liquid Sassy, which is more concentrated. So I ordered Liquid C. I got one Liquid C from a distributor, a Liquid distributor, and then I ordered a couple bottles off Amazon. And one of the Amazon bottles matched the osmolality of the one from the authorized Liquid distributor, and another one was like a lot more concentrated. It was significant. It was over the preferable high limit for osmolality that the World Health Organization set in an advisory note about a decade ago.
Interesting.
So that was really surprising to me. I don't know whether it kind of goes back to the story of how you never are 100% sure about buying sexual products on Amazon. It may be fine sometimes, but then you never this is the chain of custody essentially. It's kind of weird. Like you don't really know what happened there.
Right. Did you feel like the packaging was the same? Do you feel like it might have been, you know, they looked exactly the same? You don't feel like it was counterfeit or anything?
The label looked like really legit. There's no way I would have been able to tell just based on the label, and it was sealed and everything. Like,
interesting.
Like it should be. So I didn't look like it. It didn't appear in any way that I could perceive that it was a counterfeit.
Wow. Interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah. Deb Sativa had a question. Do you have any thoughts or opinions about powdered lubes like J-Lube?
J-Lube. Well, J-Lube is J-Lube the one? I get J-Lube, X-Lube, and K-Lube. Like, I have an ingredients list in the ingredients section. I believe J-Lube is the one with sucrose, whereas X-Lube is the one that doesn't have the sucrose added. So I would definitely recommend against J-Lube for vaginal use. As far as X-Lube and K-Lube, these are PEO-based lubricants. So they're polyethylene oxide. So you have this bottle of powder, and you measure in water. I had a weird thing where I was trying to measure the osmolality of this PEO, different PEO lubes. So I got like the Bad Dragon cum lubes, and like Jade Jelly, which I think is a PEO lube, and also was measuring X lube powder that I'd made at the same time. So I got this one section that was like really clumpy and the osmolality seemed off. And then I tested it again and it was in this range of this very hypoosmolal range. So it was like around between 20 and 50. So it's a little bit, no one has definitively said that osmolalities that low are problematic. There is one slug mucosal study, Adrian and Ramones from a while back, that found that there was one lubricant with an osmolality of 21 milliosmoles per kilogram, where that was causing some cellular problems. So that okay. data really needs to be repeated by a qualified scientist out there with good human, I think, tissue cultures, so we can study that. So the short story is, there's not a lot of evidence for whether X-Lube would be problematic, but I would definitely recommend against K-Lube for vaginal use due to the sucrose.
Okay. And I'm going to kind of combine two questions here.
One was about K-Lube.
Originally it was J-Lube, which okay, I think you
I
got it right
J-Lube.
The first time.
J-Lube is the sucrose one. Okay, my bad. I got the ingredients list. I got to.
But the bottom line is sucrose is bad. Oops. Oh, I think we lost her. I think we lost Felicity. Are you still connected, George? Do you see? Edit. Did I lose you? We'll take a second.
Okay, this is my fault. All right, I forgive me. phone call disrupted my Zoom call. Bad phone call.
Oh.
Okay, is this the right way? I'm sideways now. I'm sideways.
Yeah, easily. You're rotated. There you go.
Now we go. Now we got it. Okay. All right. I messed up the framing now. Forgive me.
That's okay. I think we can roll with it. George is on about a 5-second delay, so she's seeing you sideways right now. Oh, geez. Okay, we were talking about sucrose bad. Sucrose is bad for the vagina.
Don't put sucrose or flour in there. Yeah, no, I saw this other Reddit thread the other day where someone was at a sex toy store, this anecdote, and they were like, what do I use for cum lube? And the employee was like, well, you can mix flour and water. And I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, God.
Don't do it.
Okay, so I'm going to combine a couple questions. And let's see, Ben was asking about hybrid lubes and how do they play into the question. And yes. Also, maybe some specific recommendations for silicone toys.
Oh, okay. I'm going to need some more information from what the person wants before silicone toy recommendations. So the first question mm-hmm. was about hybrid lubricants. So hybrid lubricants are generally about 90% water. So in that sense, they do follow a lot of the same rules as water-based lubricants, and that they do have a pH and they do have an osmolality. So hybrid lubricants could definitely be unsafe as well. There are so many hybrids out there, and
I think we lost Felicity again. She is incredibly important this evening. And so, while we wait for her to come back, I'm going to take a second here. And while we wait for Felicity to reconnect, I'm going to remind everybody that we have Fergus Monster coming up next week. And we will be, I think we're going to be at 3:00. Fergus is in a different time zone, and so that will make it be a little bit earlier. I think we're going to be at 3:00 on next Sunday. I see that Felicity is reconnecting. I'll give her just a minute to get situated. And let's see, I'll remind everybody that we do this every Sunday evening. And I say every Sunday evening. It's going to be every Sunday. Next Sunday, it's at 3:00. But it is generally Sunday evenings at 7:00 Central Time. And let's see if we could get Felicity back here. There she is. And she's sideways.
I'm very sorry for the disruption. Okay. I forgot. I neglected to tell everyone that I know not to call me during the live stream. This is clearly my mistake.
You are busy and important.
No, I don't know about that, but I do get busy. I do get busy. Okay. Okay, I'm so sorry. Please
that's
proceed
okay.
with the questioning. My fault.
No, that's okay. I think you covered it when it came to the hybrid lubes, that they do have pH and osmolality issues, very much like regular water-based lubes. And if they want to get into that a little bit deeper and get more specific options, they can check out the lube guide that's on your website. Now, that's as right. far as specific recommendations that you might have for silicone toys, now, are there any lubes that you might recommend?
Lubes that I recommend for silicone toys. Okay, so yes. So the chart for all of the different pH and osmolality levels is at fal.reviews/lube. And it's hard to find good silicone lubricants. I found that silicone lubricants are very non-damaging, just platinum silicone products. Pure platinum silicone does great with hybrids and all the experience that I've had with hybrid lubricants and silicone. So we have Slickwood Silk is a little bit high in concentration, but it's not too bad. Good Clean Love also is a hybrid lubricant that will work with silicone products. If someone is wanting something thicker, something that really covers textures, really cuts down on drag for vaginal use or for anal use. I know a lot of people do like oil-based lubricants with silicone products, pure silicone toys. It can be a problem with silicone vibrators with buttons and things and crevices that the oil is real tough to clean out of for anal use. I think oil can be awesome on, you know, you got your big silicone toys, you know, use an oil-based lubricant. A lot of people will even use extra virgin coconut oil for anal use. It's very popular. Gotcha. So.
I always recommend that folks who are using hybrid or silicone lubes with silicone toys always test it first. Find a spot on the bottom. And I even recommend it with hybrids just because, you know, you're going to spend $50, $75, $100, even $200 on a toy. Take 5 minutes and just test it, you know, and just save yourself some heartache. But yeah, hybrid lubes are often quite okay with silicone toys. But I do like to be very conservative and recommend that people test. Just be safe. So
That's right.
Let's see. Okay. I will remind everybody, if you've got any questions, drop them in the chat. George will wrangle those and get them to me. Now, you said that you came into this kind of as a toy collector, and that you kind of had some indie toys in the beginning. Have you done any toy reviews for any of the indie makers?
I did a toy review for Fantasy Grove last year, and also Paladin Pleasure is awesome to work with, and I love their rainbows. And Fantasy Grove does like these amazing splatter neon marbles. So I've gotten that. I bought a lot of Pleasure Forge toys recently, like a year ago, but didn't review them formally. I'm definitely still picking up indie toys, but not reviewing them quite as frequently. So yes.
Now, didn't you do somebody's grinder recently?
Oh yeah, I just did the Uncover Tentacle Grinder was what I did. Yes. The tentacles are super fun. Grinders are definitely something that I was not, I just kind of like fell into them recently after I got some vibrating grinders and decided somebody needs to make like a really big list. And I found a couple sources, other reviewers, like Kelvin Sparks has a list too. And I just tried to make my own list of grinders. So it's really fun, I think, after the amount of toys that I've collected and years of reviewing, to find something that is actually novel. And grinders are kind of one of those cool new areas right now.
Yeah. What patterns have you seen over the years in terms of products and the product evolution? What patterns have you seen?
Ooh, this is a very detailed question. There definitely are trends. I see trends coming and going. I know air pulsation toys have gotten started out with, you know, womanizers like in the 2010s and kind of exploded from there with all the different Satisfy products, and now everybody and their brother has an air pulsation toy. And so air pulse toys have gotten a lot bigger. Thrusting dildos kind of had a streak for a while going on. Let's see, what else? There are definitely trend roses. Roses are the thing for the last year. So rose vibrators. Lots of toys do come and go. I think some of them will stick around and you know, powerful, potent toy, clip vibes tend to do well in general, like Satisfyer or The Rose. So,
yeah, I've noticed that the grinders have been very popular this year. They've been, okay. At least in the indie side, because that's where I'm at, is really, you know, that's just where my heart is mm-hmm. seeing the makers and all the different stuff that comes out of these independent minds. And, mm-hmm. You know, this year it's been Grinders. I think last year it was Maws, you know,
that's right.
The mouth with a tongue usually. Yeah. and we're starting to see some really interesting colorations and so
right, the near clear boom is kind of like winding down a little bit, maybe. I don't not necessarily, it's still going strong in some quarters.
Yeah, it is. Some people have found their niche with that. They found their way of using it, and Pleasure Forge, Shop Dad and Kristen over at Pleasure Forge, they have really gotten into doing some of their confetti pours with near right. clear, and they're doing a really cool. good job with that. Yeah. So, now let's see if. You know, you kind of got into this as a hobby, and you know, you found this little niche that you felt like there was a gap in the market, and you filled that gap, and you turned it into your own. Do I want to call it a business? Is it a business for you?
It's a business now. It's mixed with a lot of pleasure.
Okay. Well, what if somebody wanted to get into that business? How would they go about doing that?
Well, you buy toys, analyze them, start writing about them, do a lot of practice reviews, and you know, start a website.
And that's it.
It's a lot of complication. I've had a lot of server issues, and you can have years where I'm sorry, I'm trying to adjust my framing after the phone call mess up. And then there was the time where, you know, the Google algorithm shifted and my traffic jived by, you know, 50% for no reason, even though my content hadn't changed, and you know, this happened and that happened, and everyone is paying influencers affiliates less now for sales. So it's a tumultuous thing.
it's
a lot to figure out.
Well, what was it that what do you think that made it viable for you?
That's not a complaint, by the way. I love this job.
Right.
There are some struggles, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what was it that made it viable for you?
Google ranking.
Okay. But then, I guess affiliate links.
Yeah. Yes. Right. That's correct.
Okay. So somebody that was wanting to get into it, you know, they've got to have writing skills. They've got to be able to think analytically. They've got to be able to put those thoughts into an original form, and be able to. Rank in Google, I guess.
Yes, it's also graphic design, photography, link building. There's a lot of different avenues that are go into it.
Okay. Let's see. Now, what if? What about makers who wanted to get in touch with you and get into or have you do reviews? Is that something that you would be interested in?
Sure. I love supporting indie artists. So it's definitely always something that I'm open to, getting more independent makers. I think that I do obviously, you know, want to represent brands that people are going to be seeing at local toy shops, big brands, but I also want to be able to give different options for people who want to buy small business and, you know, support just really people out there figuring out their craft and making beautiful works of art. They're also toys, you know, pleasure toys. So,
yeah. Is there any particular category that you like?
Okay, so yes, so this is, I definitely always want to be clear that I have my tastes and this is the perspective that I review from. And my particular thing is that I like toys that have some degree of realism. So I'm never going to write like an anal snake guide because, or a I can't write a tentacle dildo guide because that's, I think that they're really fun, but I like something that has a head on it and maybe some additional shaft textures, but I tend to gravitate towards shapes that have something of a realistic characteristic in some way.
Okay. So
plus fun that, textures sometimes.
So heavy fantasy stuff is a little bit outside of your world.
I wouldn't say that it's, I guess outside of my world is I'm familiar with it. I own, you know, toys that are knotted or very non-realistic and use them and enjoy them. But they're not my favorite thing.
Okay.
I like there just to be some kind of, I'm a G-spot person. So I tend to gravitate toward toys that will have a forward curve or some kind of prominent ridge for G-spot pleasure specifically. So that's my slant as far as the individual personal reviews are concerned.
Okay. Now, what does your collection look like? How big of a collection do you have?
Oh, it's kind of expanded into like a closet, a laundry room, and this whole area of my bedroom currently. So it's kind of overflowing. Oh, then there's the other closet. This is the box. This is the first fantasy box I filled up in the main content. So let's see how well I can do this. Let's see if you can see what all is in. Just like, oh, I have a dildo bathtub shot from a while back, but that's hard to see all of them. But it's, we've got some, you know, Barime, there's the Vixen Mustang classic. I'm probably getting a bad angle camera angle now, aren't I? Bad camera angle. But yeah, just I've got just a box. There's a box and then there's some shelves and
wow.
it's a little bit, some of the expanse here. We got the drawers of, I see, I'm not particularly organized. I love these people that do these walkthrough tours. I've seen heyepiphora.com's walkthrough dildo closet tour. And I'm like, wow, that is impressive. I'm not that organized. So this is like random dildo drawers where I just have this and then they're just kind of like, just like drawers. There's many drawers. And you know, I don't have everything, but I have a smattering of different, all kinds of different types that is a little bit chaotic at this point. Is kind of how to expand in the garage as well. So that's,
wow.
It's interesting. but it's sad because, you know, I get people like, well, you know, you don't use these. Can you sell them? Can you pass them on? And it's
right.
Like, some of them I definitely would, but I also don't want to give away my like home address. So, also, I do keep the vibrator specifically so that I can compare them for future guides or rankings that I would want to do.
Right.
Just to the power, as long as the vibrator motor will last.
Gotcha.
Whatever number of years. So.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you mentioned it earlier that you like to do comparisons and you know, if you sell it and it's gone, it's kind of hard to do a comparison.
Yes, that's right.
So,
clear storage for her birthday. That's right. I have some clear storage, but some of it's kind of blacked out, black storage. Yeah. But yeah, this is the small and the large, the smallest and the largest like toy comparison kind of thing that I've got going on here is for a prop.
Oh, wow. Oh,
wrong way. It's grandiose.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, George is impressed.
Yeah. It was,
let's see. Have you thought about doing any designs? Have you thought about becoming a toy designer?
I have a couple designs. I worked with an independent maker called The Pleasure Tailor to create a couple custom products recently, which was pretty unique. One of them was realistic. One of them was the realistic G-spotter. And one of them was a pegging oriented toy. So it's every now and then I That's two cases I've gotten a chance to do something a little bit custom.
Oh,
Besides,
okay.
exploring the beautiful like custom options that I know you do at Amavidi, you do the different colorations where people can kind of select between the colors they want, the firmness they want, something like that's more of a traditional fantasy custom. Obviously, that's always awesome. Just getting to see like a surprise me pour from a maker or specifying, I want these three colors and this density for this toy that I like is, that's cool. Everybody should be able to do that.
One of the things that is very hard for me to explain to people is how shape and size impacts firmness.
Yes, that's true.
And not necessarily firmness, but the perception of firmness.
Right.
Because you can have something that is, you can use the same firmness of silicone in two different shapes, and the shape itself can change the way that that firmness is perceived.
Right. And that's when I started the silicone dildo firmness guide, my first essentially real guide. I'm just kind of listing objects by shore durometer, all the toys that I had available whose maker would disclose the shore durometer. But I think that that can be a helpful indicator in some ways, but it's true that the proportionality of a toy really does change. So it's how thick something is for how long it is, right? So something that's shorter and thicker is going to feel harder than something that's long and thin, even if it's in the same shore durometer.
Yeah, and that's one of the
Gonna
things I try
flop
to
around
exp
more. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the things I try to explain to people is that, they get set on this idea that they want a 0050 or they want a 0030. And I'm like, that's not going to work. That's just not going to work for this shape. And if it's something that's kind of
This
right.
is the same density. You've got this. Let's see. Oop, very a little bit to the side. Kind of squishes a little bit. And then, it's like, and then you have this one, and it's like,
There's all kinds of flop.
yeah, this like seems so much more flexible because of that, the proportionality of the toy. So you're right. Yeah, to guide people like that.
So what about your friends and family? Do they know what you do?
Friends definitely. My parents kind of, they don't ask questions, but they know that I work with toys at this point, and I've been lucky. My family's always been supportive and been like, follow your dreams, kind of thing, which was hard when I was kind of a starving book editor for a little while, and a liberal arts major, and so it's cool. I think they're generally supportive and just want me to be doing well with my family. So I've been lucky. Though part of my fault is my fault that they kind of know maybe a little bit more than they should because I had product samples sent to their place because I live in an apartment, and I'm really like I've heard about so many stories about people getting their packages lost in their apartment mail rooms. Over the past few years, that I'm, it's like if it's a big box, I'm like, send it to my folks' house. So I'm like in a box, and it's like, Doc, one of them is like, Doc Johnson on the side, and these like huge letters.
God.
Yeah,
And then you go over to pick it up, and your mom has it on the kitchen table.
I know. My dad's like, here's your box. He just refers to everything as an Amazon box, which is kind of funny because none of the toys come from Amazon, so he's like, you got another Amazon box.
But they're generally supportive of what you do.
Yeah, I'm really, really fortunate with all of this.
And I guess, do you have to talk around it with them at all? Do you have to use any euphemisms or anything like that to, I guess you have to have a conversation with them to some extent, and you can't just completely block this part of your life out, can you? Or do you?
Right. Well, when I first decided to go into kind of formally, mostly freelancing with the blog, with FellaFileReviews.com, and doing a little bit of book editing on the side, just freelance, I told my parents, like, I have this new project coming in. I have some writing assignments, and I'm working in the adult wellness industry now. So they were kind of like, what? And then they didn't really, they were kind of like, it took a little while for that to click. It was a euphemism. But it, I didn't, it's, I, it's kind of something where you feel like you're not, it's not dishonesty, but you don't want to tell your parents, I write about how I have sex with dildos and vibrators on the internet. So it, I think it made it more comfortable.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was actually just talking to my dad yesterday, and
Okay.
we joke around. He says I'm going to have a dildo dynasty someday.
Oh, that's a
So,
great term. I love the phrase.
yeah.
Yeah.
So I've got a couple of things I want to get to, and then we'll wrap it up fairly quickly. And I'll remind everybody that if you have any last minute questions, so this is my last call for questions. If you've got any, drop them in the chat. George will get them to me and we will wrap it up. Let me go back through and make sure that I haven't missed anything. And actually, I'm going to ask a question and then I'm going to go back through what I have. Are there any things that you, how do I want to put this? What limitations have you found that you have to work around? Is there anything that is keeping you from doing what you want to do?
What I want to do. I think once since I kind of I've gotten I have a more stable partner this year, happily, where it's going well. And one thing is I haven't done as many male toy reviews in the past, consistently for the past few years. So I feel lucky that I'm moving more. We're moving more, me and him, into that area where we're doing more penis and prostate reviews. So everyone will still have some preferences, and I don't think he's going to be really into like he's not really into depth play examples still. So I'm still not going to be, writing a Flink versus the World kind of depth probe guide, but it just I feel glad to be expanding. There's some other limitations are yeah, I do. I try to express my own preferences, and everyone will come at toys from their own angle. So, I'm myself, and I'm one person, and I'm saying I like this toy. This is why I particularly like this toy. I think the finish is like this. I think the feel is like this. I think the vibrator power is like this, and this kind of stacking it up against different products. So I try to overcome some of my personal, strong personal directions while comparing to other toys that people with different tastes might like more than me.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know why I didn't catch this, is that, this is all from the woman's point of view. And you mentioned, male toys, strokers and prostate toys and things like that. That's something that you might not be able to do yourself. You might need somebody who could work with you on that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I guess that's somebody you would need somebody to work with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which kind of
Super
actually
cool.
gets to kind of gets to my next question, which was, what limitations do you have to work around? And I guess that would be one of them.
All right. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I think preferences are awesome, and everyone has limits, so I try to recognize mine, I think, is the big thing. It's important for people who are writing reviews to be like, well, I just it gets makes me really upset when I see a review where someone is like, oh, well, it was too small, and they just like totally give this toy a one-star rating or something like that. And I'm like, well, I get that you didn't enjoy it, and that's very valid, but it's not worth taking down someone's rating on whatever platform, be like, well, this wasn't really my personal cup of tea, but I think it might work for people who like smaller insertibles.
Yeah, I've had a few of those reviews where they literally ordered. I gave them what they ordered. And there have been a few where I've like been I messaged them back. I was like, I'm not sure this is going to work for what you want it to do. And they're like, this is what I want. And then I get the review afterward and they're like, this was they didn't say it was horrible, but they said it was too soft. And I was like, I tried to warn you, but yeah.
Right.
Now, what about inspiration? Do you Do you have anybody that you look to for inspiration, or are there writers or other reviewers or anybody else that you draw upon as inspiration?
Ooh. I think what I mainly do is at this point I don't read other people's reviews if it's for a product that if it's for a product that I don't own. I tend to not read other people's reviews of a product that I'm working on reviewing myself, because I don't even subconsciously want that opinion to cloud my judgment. Although there was one exception. When I recently did a review of some Uberime grinders, and I knew my preferences were going to be totally different than Betty Butch's. And I think she's an amazing trans reviewer who also has a partner with the Clinton Vulva. So they both, you know, have different perspectives. So I kind of like just their review. I think I threw their perspective into my review to kind of give someone's different perspective that I knew I wouldn't be able to give that kind of feedback. So yeah, I try to not just work based on other reviewers at this point, but when I got into the business, Epiphora.com and DangerousLily.com were the reviewers who started this whole trend of this body safe movement and really putting it out to the public, and huge props to both of them. Epiphora is still going strong. It's amazing after over a decade. So definitely props for just kind of seeing her style as a way that you can be cutting and incisive, and then give your own feedback about how a product is, and you don't have to say that something is great just because it's by, you know, this maker or that maker, or you're supposed to like it, or it's expensive or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I just realized I've got a bunch of pictures that I never brought up for us. You want to take a minute and we'll go through them real quick?
Okay, sure. Yes, right. Please. I just threw those in. Okay.
What do we got here?
This is a little bit of the evolution of the blog. This is when I started doing the dildo guides, and my first piece was the dildo firmness piece, and then I moved into including dual density products in it. And I was trying to, back in 2018, I was trying to stack up the squishiness of various brands of then available dual density silicone dildos on the market versus each other and rank them from hard to soft.
Hmm. Okay. Have you ever thought about getting a durometer tester?
Oh yeah, I have a durometer. I have an adurometer currently. I'm thinking about, I've debated back and forth about spending $700 for the 00 durometer. Yeah. And let me know your thoughts on this, because my feeling is that owning a lot of products that are definitely certified by their makers, either 0030 or 0050, even a few 0040, that the difference between the 3 and the 5 and the 00 sure is, it really changes your perception, changes on how thick the item is. Although there's a slight difference. So I don't know, I might go for the 00 durometer at some point, but at this point I've been working based off of the A durometer for years. And the interesting part is that a toy that 0050 will measure as 0.5A if you poke it in certain places. It has to be a little bit harder though. So it's also with the durometer test, you also have to know how to use the pin and what point you're sticking it in the toy and how hard you're pressing and the angle of the pin. So yes.
That's a really hard question for me to answer, because size and shape changes the perception, and it's, a measurement can be deceptive. You know, you might be able to objectively say this is a 0030 or this is a 0050, but that's not going to necessarily tell somebody how it's going to feel.
That's true.
So it's a really hard question for me to answer.
Yes.
And
And they are, there's such fractional differences with these super, with the really super soft silicones, that I think it's worth it for people who do have a large toy collection and are used to the variations. That info can be useful for them. But for just someone who's walking in off the street, it's, it may not be as helpful.
Yeah, maybe at the quote unquote connoisseur level, it might.
Yeah.
Also, some silicones, especially the near clears, can change firmness if they are subjected to heat. So while they may measure at one firmness, if they've been boiled or something like that, they can change firmness.
Right. So. You see, so you have the dimethicone kind of seep out a little bit more over time. Well, after a few years, right?
Yeah.
They become a little bit harder.
Yeah. And so these are your, it looks like vibrators and thrusting toys.
This was one of my other beginner, this is early days guides when I first started writing these comparative pieces. This was when I got into the thrusters, thrusting dildos, and the pulsators. Right. So they are, and that was so early that I threw in a rotating plug at the end. So it was like anything with its self-propelled motion. It's like very early on. So I had the Stronic pulsators, the Velvet thrusters, and the Maya Maximum thruster, and that pipe dream thing. And anyway, then the rimming plug at the rotation got thrown in again at the end. And at some point it found its way into a separate piece on pure rotating toys. So
this is, gotcha.
Part of the evolution.
And then these are all your wands.
This is my wand picks guide. This is, yes, and most of these still hold true, except the Wii Vibe wand is currently discontinued, may or may not come back at any point. But this was when I was writing my wand vibrator power ranking back in 2019. I started trying to baseline the strength of these products, all these different vibrating wands, and they're versus the magic wand, which is, you know, the gold standard for classic wand vibrator.
Basically the strongest on the left.
You know, they're not in a pure, the guide itself has points on like on a 10 point scale, but this is kind of a most recommended versus least recommended. And then I go into pros and cons.
Gotcha.
So it's vague. It's mostly strong to powerful, but then I had the handheld, the mid-sized ones were also off on them, on the right side, separated from the full-size ones. So, yeah. And this was my kind of like, oh my God shot from when the pandemic started. This is March in 2020. And, you know, we were just sitting here and everyone got quarantined and just kind of life felt like life came to a standstill, and there's just this huge amount of stress, I think, suddenly with people being locked down. And I was like, oh my God, what do I do in lockdown to deal with this? I'm like, I got my magic wand and my chocolate bar. Those behind me. Yeah.
And then we got a little bit of a view earlier, but then we've also got this one.
Yeah, that's one of the other shots of the slightly less filled fantasy dildo bin there. So it's got some nice platinum silicone all hanging out together.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have one final question for you, and then I'm going to wrap it up. Oh, I need to check and make sure that I haven't missed any questions. Oh, that's an interesting one. Do you chat with other reviewers? Do you compare notes?
No, not really. I've met other reviewers, and occasionally will, mainly I've been in contact with other reviewers when I found that someone is stealing our images collectively. Like people will just take these essentially copyright images are protected by copyright law within the United States. So I'll pass on if I find someone that's stealing my images and their images and be like, hey, this person, this site is unfortunately, you know, has lifted some of your images. So that's honestly been the vast majority of my contact over the past years. But yeah, I guess so.
Okay. I haven't had that problem yet, but my stuff is pretty, my stuff is pretty unique in the sense that I don't know why anybody else would want to use it. Do you have any particular music you listen to while you're writing?
Oh, you know what? With me writing is such a Oh, there's a specific term. It's such a like a flow state where I get very, so anything outside, I'll either just tune it out, or if it's a really heavy, strong beat, I'll find it distracting. So I can't listen
Okay.
to music while I'm writing.
White
I
noise,
wouldn't hear
or
anything.
what about white noise or anything like that?
I've done that white noise, like, soothing rhythmic things while I'm testing the toys, but not while I'm actually writing about them.
Okay. My last question for you. What does success look
Okay,
like
yes,
for
sir.
you? Very serious. What does success look like for you?
I hope it means being someone who can generally be seen as objective enough, or at least discloses their preferences and biases. I think as someone who's trusted as an authority on, if you want to know how a toy is, that I would give you a fairly objective opinion, that I would be a source, and I'm trying to, I think the Lube Guide is part of putting out that data to the world where maybe we should reconsider how some of these lubricants really are treating our bodies. Obviously, it's that's kind of a subjective criterion, but just being able to support the site and seeing the numbers go up has felt very successful to me over the years as well. And again, it's been somewhat stressful in times where, like, the Google algorithm has randomly hit me and the numbers dropped, or just their fluctuations. So I try not to put too much of whether my success or failure is how many visitors there are to the site every month, because that can ebb and flow. And it may not, it most likely isn't anything that I've done specifically to cause a big shift, as with the pieces that I publish now. So I hope I've been successful in telling people about this, helping them explore the different tastes are okay, and the different opinions are okay, and there are a lot of options that you have out there, and think critically about what you're buying and what you like too. Find out what you like. So I hope I've conveyed that message.
Okay. Good. Well, was there anything that we didn't get to that you wanted to cover?
Ooh, the only thing I really missed is maybe talking shop more with you and hearing your experience about how Amavidi was created and what the process was like for you. But that's a separate conversation. I'm not sure if we have time.
It for me, it I am let's see, it's kind of a weird story, is that I have several different lines of business, and I use silicone for different things, including resin casting. And
Awesome.
I was looking at silicone, and I was going, what else can I use this for? I mean, and I've been using silicone for years, probably over
Awesome.
10 years. And I was looking at it, I was going, what else can I use it for? And then I was like, well, I can make molds. I can make candle molds. And I started doing some research, and I was like, wait, I can make toys out of this? I can make sex toys out of this? Huh. Well, that's interesting. I wonder if I could do that. And then I was like, well, how hard could it be? And then you're down that
More
road,
tools.
and
That's
and so
great.
it for me, it was a way of using a material that I was already familiar with, and a way for me to be creative. And it was a way for me to, because the silicone that I was doing, it was for clients, and I was doing castings for clients. And so there, it wasn't really creative. It was much more, it was somewhat manufacturing. And so this was a way for me to be creative, and a way for me to kind of play with art. And it turned into a business. And so then I started trying to kind of, well, I don't want to say trying to get involved in the community. I just became involved in the community, and then became a resource. And so that's kind of how all of this evolved.
I love the how the YouTube, having gone back and looked at the YouTube channel recently, just the different kind of how-to tutorials and just kind of short clips. It's very succinct, and also instructive. It's super cool what you do.
Yeah. One of the things I have a problem with is actually going long enough.
I get,
yeah, I'm like, this is what you need to know. You want, you need to know, this is what platinum cure silicone is. That's all. That's it. It's like 2 minutes. I'm done. I'm out.
Aww.
And so I haven't figured out how to make an 8 or 10 minute video yet.
I kind of envy that because I'll just like sit there and just like ramble and like do this like discourse on just like the texture of the silicone, and it'll be like 5 minutes in. I'm like, oh no, that's too much. So I'm the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't figured out the YouTube thing yet. It's for me, it's about sharing information, you know, answering a question. This is it. This is all you have a question. This is the answer. And to me, it's almost about, efficiency, because then I can grab a link and I can throw it at somebody when they have a question. You know, I don't have to type out all of this anymore. I can just grab a link, send them a link to YouTube, and then I'm off and running and I can go answer another question. So, yeah.
All right. That's nice. Yeah. Yes. It's kind of like doing demos. I just do short clips on YouTube. Essentially, they're demos mm-hmm. about squish or movement just to show visually something that I can't explain adequately in writing.
Yeah, video is something that, you know, it has something that writing doesn't. So, you know, there's some things that you just have to do video. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, if there's nothing else, then I will let you enjoy your evening.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, I like the shirt bit too. Thank you so much, Derek. It's been awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you say goodnight and then hang out for a minute and then we'll do a wrap up and I will say goodnight to everybody.
All right. My apologies again for the cutouts. You did a great job covering.
It's all right.
Thank you. Wave. Good night.
All right. I'll talk to you in just a minute. All right. So that was Felicity with Failophile Reviews. And there will be links in the video description and chat and all of the different places. And Felicity has been wonderful. And her lube guide has been incredibly informative. So definitely check that out. Also, her reviews are extremely informative. And one of the interesting things about it is that they're not just specific product reviews. They are comparisons. And so, you know, if you've got one toy and it's within that spectrum, you can get a sense of how your toy compares against whatever it is that she is reviewing in that spectrum. So it's a really useful way of being able to make an informed decision about maybe the next toy you want to get. And with that, I am out and I'll see you next week. Bye.